United States waters provide some of the most sustainable seafood in the world, in large part because America set hard limits for how many fish can be caught. But the enforcement of those limits has changed over time. 4 years ago, the government privatized fishing rights. They're called catch shares. And if you got a catch share, you own it forever. Reporter Lee Vandervoo is managing director of Investigate West. Her new book, The Fish Market, looks into who wins and who loses with the catch share system.
Well, if you got a piece, chances are you're doing pretty good. If you didn't, you now have to buy your way in, which can be very expensive.
Yeah, so you have people who had a share early on, and it's like, as you say, they won the lottery.
Yeah, it's, you know, really the equivalent of being given a house for free. You know, it's a thing that can make money for you forever that you didn't have to pay anything for. It's a good deal.
And it gives us a sort of David Goliath, rich, poor. You describe it as a feudal landlord situation. Will you describe that?
Yeah, it does indeed. I mean, this was a tool that was supposed to boost the ecological health of fish and make fishing safer and bring better products to market. It has done all that. But it was a bit of a gamble, this ownership piece, and a little bit like giving, say, 100 houses to 100 people and betting that they're all going to cut their grass. I mean, you just don't know. And so the outcome here was mixed. The hope was that people who had ownership would become good stewards and conservationists. In a lot of cases, that did happen. And these are people that bring us some of the most amazing products on the market today. Unfortunately, a lot of people chose simply to become landlords. They rent their access to the sea, to the people who do the work, which is putting a downward pressure on workers and making it more expensive to go out and fish with less profit.
And that downward pressure on workers, how does that affect those workers' lives?
You know, coastal communities for a long, long time, their backbone in many cases has been fishing. And what is happening in these situations where there's landlords moving in on coastal towns is that sometimes, you know, when they want to sell out or they just want to go somewhere different, they take that right with them. If it's going to go to the next highest bidder, it's going to go to somebody with a really deep pocket. It's going to be very, very difficult for the next generation for fishermen to be that deep pocket. Think of it as trying to buy a house from a landlord who keeps raising the rent on you. It's very hard to make it to the top of this industry. So what we're starting to see is, you know, larger corporations, investors, equity actors come in and buy these properties as the next generation of owners. And that really pulls money out of coastal towns, coastal economies. It consolidates business, and it does indeed collapse those small family fishing businesses that have been the economic spine of coastal communities for many, many years.
Of course, Lee, you researched your book on the water in part. You went to sea. Can you tell us a story that brings all of this to life?
Oh, yeah, sure. I had a really fun time actually reporting some of this at sea. One of the things that I did was I went up and had a four-day fishing trip in Alaska in the halibut industry. And that's an industry where they actually require the landlords to ride on the boats with the fishermen.
The money person doesn't have to do any fishing. So
right.
They're just there.
Yeah, what you'll see in the halibut industry in Alaska especially is you'll see a lot of young fishermen and captains kind of tricking out their boats to attract landlords. You know, these folks are, they want to ride in style. They want to be as comfortable as they can be throughout the fishing trip. And they want to have something to do if they're not actually interested in fishing, which is often the case. So you'll see fishermen putting massive DVD collections on their boats, big screen TVs. In some cases, sauna or competing with the kind of food that they're willing to provide. As comfortable as they make these people, that translates into work for them.
That sounds like an awkward situation for everybody on that boat.
Yeah. You know, in the case of the boat that I rode on, the landlord was a retiring fisherman. He was older, and he assisted as much as he could, and that was about as good as it gets. I have heard some fascinating stories about landlords really pushing their crews to catch, you know, within a certain window because they got a tea time to make on Wednesday, and they'll be darned if they're going to miss their plane. It's almost treated a little bit like an inconvenient vacation, and the crew is, you know, really under the gun in some cases. The weather's just presumed to be fair, and the fish are biting.
But if a big part of the idea was to save disappearing species, Has it worked? Environmentalists seem to like this sort of cap and trade system.
Yeah, they really do like it, or some really do like it. There is this social justice question of, who benefits and who pays, but in terms of the ecological health, it is always a good idea to have a hard cap on how many fish can come out of the water. Since 2006, we have had that policy in the U.S. It's just a question of whether this is the tool we want to use to enforce it. So I think sometimes, the question of whether privatization equals, setting limits gets a little muddy. In reality, there are a lot of ways to set these limits, and the privatization piece is what has caused these downstream impacts to workers.
Well, what's a better way to regulate the fishing industry?
Well, one thing that gets tossed around is the idea that maybe, seafood should work like any other natural resource extraction in the U.S. that comes from public property. So, for example, timber, mining, geothermal, solar, wind on public lands, grazing. They're all long-term leases where people have the advantage of having long-term access to the resource so that they can go ahead and make their business plans that are dependable and bankable, but they revert to the government over a certain period of time. That's not the case with seafood these days and catch air systems. Those properties, once they're given away, they can be sold on the private market, just like real estate or some kind of stock. And that is what creates these downstream impacts.
Did you always find in your reporting that the richer the player in the fishing industry is, the less deserving or less sympathetic they are?
No, not at all. Like I said, there are some folks who within the catch air system really did become the incredible stewards that environmental groups hope for when they started pushing this policy. One of the things that I did in my book is I follow a company called Gulf Wild and a group of guys that try to design a product that they want to trace each individual fish from its place in the ocean and its journey through the supply chain to the consumer. And that's telling the consumer who the fishermen were that caught it, what kind of gear they used, what sort of boat they rode in on, where they were, where they landed it, who the processors were, and how it got to the grocery store or the restaurant where it was consumed. That's an incredible feat, and watching them attempt to do that was a great joy and really shows that there is such an interest in conservation and transparency for some of these owners. And they are the ones that buy into the system in a really big way. They really believe in it. In that case, Gulf Wild, they take a portion of proceeds and they put them into conservation efforts, and they have been amazingly good stewards of the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay, so there's such a mix of winners and losers here. You're saying that ecologically, we've come a ways. This is a good thing. And yet you think there are better ways to regulate our fishing system. So should I be wanting a change? Should I be advocating for a new system? What's a listener to take away?
Well, ecologically, what really works is, again, it's just these hard caps on the sea. And I think that the private property piece is the piece that is kind of bungling things up. I think if a listener wanted to get really politically active here, then it would be lobbying for fair access for people to the sea and eliminating some of these landlord systems that have gotten in place that could take us in the wrong direction.
And if we were to favor small fishers in small coastal towns more, does that come at a price? Is there a sacrifice in that?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a good thing. It's just engendering support for your coastal neighbors and trying to just pay attention to which products you buy. Those small fishermen are still out there. The more visible they make themselves to the buyer, the better. I'm here in Oregon, and I see in my community lots of visibility for folks who, for example, Port Orford Sustainable Seafood, all small boats, real small port. They pool their resources, and they ferry their catch up the I-5 corridor to consumers who are willing to pay just a little bit extra to know that that comes from a community that they support. I think programs like that are great, and that's one way to participate.
So, Lee, one takeaway I get is buy direct. Know a good fishmonger.
Yeah, know a good fishmonger. If you can't participate in one of these community-supported fisheries like I described, or you're not on the coast and you can't just buy from a fisherman, then just buy from somebody who knows what they're buying. There's lots of good fishmongers around. In fact, some of our major grocery stores, I've gone in and had conversations with people behind the fish counter just to see how much they know. And very often I find that they are pretty smart about this stuff. So I think it's just a question of having the conversation and buying things that you feel comfortable buying.
Lee Vandervoo is Managing Director of Investigate West, and her new book is The Fish Market, Inside the Big Money Battle for the Ocean and Your Dinner Plate. It's KUOW's The Record.